Before we start the show today, we wanted to give you all a brief note about the production of this week's conversation. This week, we sat down with President Ashby for a conversation nearly 6 months in the making, but it didn't go exactly as planned. Our assistant station manager, Rayan Eltandawi, was the original scheduled interviewer for this episode. Unfortunately, they caught COVID only a few days before the scheduled date, and therefore were unable to make it to the recording time. Without their help and tireless dedication over the past several months to this interview, this episode would not have been possible. We want to express our thanks to Rayan before we get started today. And now, on to the show. Welcome to WMBC. I'm Josh Marciante, WMBC Chief Engineer.
I'm Joao Veloso, Station Manager.
And we are delighted to be joined in the studio by the President of UMBC, Dr. Valerie Shears Ashby.
Good morning. Good morning. Thank you for having me. Delighted to be here.
Thank you so much for being on. We're very, very happy to have you, and we're very glad to have this interview with you. So I want to start off just asking about some of your academic background. Mm-hmm. It doesn't take much of a Google search to know that you have an extensive academic history. You've taught chem classes, you've synthesized polymers, and we're just kind of wondering, what was your time like as a college student that's led you down this path?
You may be the first person who's ever asked me that question. I love that question. So most people want to know about my vision for UMBC right out of the gate, you know, all those things. Rarely do they ask me what my experience was like as an undergrad myself or as a graduate student. And so I had a great UNC Chapel Hill big public university experience. I was in the Department of Chemistry. I knew when I was a high school student that I was going to major in chemistry. Wow. I loved my high school chem teacher and class. By the way, I was in a very small high school, never did a chemistry experiment, no lab, just all coursework. And I loved the coursework, and I thought, I'm going to major in chemistry. Now, I did not know what I was going to do, but I knew that I was going to major in chemistry. And so that was a decision that was the right one for me. I always tell my students, feel free to change your minds. But that was the right decision for me. I loved it. Especially when I got to organic chemistry, I thought, this is heaven. I know that's not everybody's heaven, but
I was going to say,
there are other words that people have used for organic chemistry that are not exactly heaven. But I loved it. It was this beautiful language, and it just made sense to me. It was logical, and it was fun, and we were solving problems. I enjoyed that. So I did have challenges, not inorganic, but I had challenges in other places. I always tell people I got a C in physics and I was happy.
I could certainly relate to that one.
I like to tell my students, you don't have to do things perfectly. It's okay, right? You're not supposed to be great at everything. It was a great experience, but I also had a lot of fun as an undergraduate. I pledged a sorority. I was very engaged in campus life. I made good friends. I had a good time.
Yeah, well, it's great that you mentioned campus life, because we wanted to also ask about, did you mm-hmm. take part in any student organizations, or you mentioned Greek life? How was your experience with those?
It was fantastic. I did work. I led several things in my sorority. So our sorority was really about being of service. I'm an Alpha Kappa Alpha. And it's all about service, service in the community, service to mankind, and sisterhood. So we had just a great set of folks in the organization, and I had an opportunity to serve in various places there. And we did a lot of work with, like, tutoring students in our local community and, you know, all sorts of just service, which I enjoy thoroughly. Like, service is something that is really important to me, and I actually want it for all of my UMBC students to really engage. So I was able to do that. I also did some leadership with organizations like our Campus Y. We had I don't know if you're familiar with Campus Y, but it's also a service-based organization in the community. And then, of course, I was the chemistry geek, so there were all of the, you know, chemistry, women in science kinds of things that I participated in also. Everywhere I go, I'm going to always find my church to be of service in my community through my church. So I also had that going when I was in undergrad. So It was a full life. So, very enjoyable.
Awesome. Awesome. Mm-hmm. Great to hear that. So with all the involvement that you had at the undergrad, the grad level, and now in your professional career, and combining that with your new current role as our president here at UMBC, how do you think that voices can be uplifted on our campus? Mm-hmm, we've heard a number of initiatives that you've started, like UMBC Bold, that are aimed around, you know, getting the student voice out there. So do you have any tips on how to empower our student lives to be more fulfilling?
I just love your questions. This is fantastic. So, you know, the way I see the university is that it belongs to you, right? And when I say you, it's anybody here who thinks that it belongs to them, right? So it belongs, the university belongs to the students. It's not my university, it's your university, right? It's not the president's university. It's the university's university. The people who are here, it's yours. We are here to maximize your experience, to facilitate some things, to, you know, do some bureaucratic work that you don't have to do, right? Our job is to envision and imagine for, but it's in collaboration with you. We are co-creating this thing together. It is, but it's your university. So I want my students and faculty and staff to know it's theirs. And so you do have a voice because it belongs to you. Right? You're not visiting my university. This is your university. And so I just encourage all of our students in particular, since that's what we're talking about right now, to know. And actually, by the way, I hear this from students who come to my office hours. This is an advertisement, office hours for students with the president on Thursdays from 3 to 5. Always have students in there every Thursday. And it's great because I get to hear your voices. That's one way. You come in and talk to me, right? But I want you to know that anything you see that is going well or not going well, or that you want to create or that you can imagine, it's your university. So you should feel empowered. You should know that your voice matters. And every student who comes on this campus, I feel like the university should be better because you were here, right? Which means I have to hear what you're thinking, what you're imagining. I have students who come in my office and have great ideas. I won't tell you about this one that's in my head now because we're going to implement it. And then I'll tell you later that was this from a student. Like, we're going to do something for the entire campus that changes how we welcome and greet and bring people into this campus. And it was a student's idea.
Wow.
So I just want you to know it's yours. So feel empowered. You don't have to be invited to speak. You're at home. Right. So you're welcome to speak.
That's very inspiring. Sort of on a similar note, we're going to shift the talk a little towards student media on the campus. As many students and staff high in the chain at WMBC are aware, student media has recently suffered from a bout of forced silence due to restrictions and fear of controversy. There's a campus-wide belief that many of the current restrictions are due to image preservation and status retention of the university and its staff. Access to employees for interviews has been heavily denied, monitored, and access to campus hardware for reporting such events has been shut down almost entirely. Do you feel that the struggle of the media-centric organizations on campus have a broader relation to the current political events and culture, and what are your thoughts on why the current plight of students currently outed as in LGBTQ plus folks are 8% of the faculty and their voice has seemingly been ignored and washed over?
So this is an interesting question. So what I can't speak to is what has happened in the past because I wasn't here.
Right.
What I can speak to is how I view these things. Okay. So I'm happy to do that. You covered about 5 different topics, so I'm gonna see if I can speak to kind of up high, and then if you want to ask me more specifics, I'm happy to go into that. So I'll go up high. I'll go where we started from the previous question. It's not unrelated.
Mm-hmm.
I value the voices of our community, and one of the things that I'm excited about for UMBC is for us to. So first of all, we have a vision, which I always go to, because it's the North Star, I think. It's our pole star, Right. Well, if you ever read our vision, you see it sometimes up on the polls. It says, the last line says, we're welcoming and inspiring inquisitive minds from all backgrounds. That's a big statement.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I love that it's a big statement, because if it was a small statement, it wouldn't be a vision. Right?
Mm-hmm.
It'd be an action. We check the box and we move on. It's a part of our vision statement because it's going to ever be before us. Right. Meaning that you're going to have to keep striving for that thing every single day as people change on this campus, as the community changes, as we become more diverse in every single way. It's just all as the world shifts, you're going to have to pay attention to what that means for every human who steps on this campus every single day. How are you going to welcome and inspire inquisitive minds from all backgrounds today on Monday, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not like last week, because of the minds and people have changed. You got to think anew for, you know, what does this group of people need, or who are these, what do these individuals need? So that's theoretically how I think about it.
Mm-hmm.
And what I am excited about going forward is I'm discovering all the places where we have done that well, and I'm discovering the places where maybe we haven't.
Mm-hmm.
Either intentionally done it well, or unintentionally not done it well.
Mm-hmm.
I do believe that everybody on this campus, I just have to do that because of where I sit, I have to believe that people have good intentions, okay, no matter what the action is. But I will tell you, I want to think very specifically about all of our groups, all of our individuals, and what the needs actually are. And as I have listened in bowl sessions, but also listened in student office hours and various other places, I'm discovering where we have room to grow, where we can be better. And actually, here's another plug. I don't do this often. I get to do two personal plugs today. I never do this. Here's the second personal plug. I get a chance on next Thursday, which is Inauguration Thursday, to actually talk about the values of this place and what I value, what I think we value, and what I imagine for us going forward. One of the things that you will hear me say is that I want every, I'm talking particularly about students now, I want every single student who steps on my campus to know that you are welcomed and that you belong. That's a statement, but then the question is, what did you do so that they knew that? How did you prepare for them so that they felt welcomed? So we've got a lot of room to grow in our facilities, in our access to various things, some places in our culture. We've got some culture change work to do. And so I won't look back and judge what has happened, but I will tell you, this is what excites me about what is going to happen going forward. And a lot of those groups and individuals that you mentioned, I've talked to people, so I'm pretty clear about what the
mm-hmm.
issues are. The other beautiful thing is that they're not insurmountable.
Mm-hmm.
You just got to make a decision.
Right.
So I appreciate it. I'm hopeful that student media, you mentioned a number of different groups, student media, you mentioned some faculty, you mentioned some LGBTQ students, I guess, faculty and staff. I see that. My hope is that when we have done the work going forward, that question won't need to be asked.
Yeah, we also strive for a better future.
We're on our way.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I know why we're on our way. And I say this because, you know, it's, look at where we've been in such a short amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
I keep saying we're a young university. We're very young.
Yeah.
56 years is no time in university life.
Right.
And to have established our vision and to have established our values of inclusive excellence, that's a pretty big deal. There aren't a lot of universities who say that that's their first priority. We say that that's our first priority. So I am hopeful, just like you are. I'm more than hopeful. I know we're going to do the work that makes hope real.
So, yeah, with all you just talked about,
mm-hmm.
how do you think we, that as representatives, in a way, of the student voice on campus, and as a Black woman yourself,
mm-hmm.
How do you think us personally, we should go about uplifting both student and minority voices on campus?
Mm-hmm.
And as WMBC, how would you recommend or offer some tips on how we cover some of these controversial topics,
mm-hmm.
And, you know, recent events that have affected people on campus? since the retirement of the previous president.
Sure, no, I appreciate that. As I'm listening to you, I'm sitting here thinking, I am no expert in communications and media. Okay. Having said that, I do appreciate that you are asking a question about voices that may not always be heard. And this is one that is challenging because, you know, I think, as again, I go back to where I started before, is that I do believe that people have great intentions. Even people who want to represent people's voices that aren't heard have great intentions, and sometimes they miss the mark, right? But I think that it is a matter of, I'll give this example. When I sit in my office hours, I'm not talking to representatives of the students. I'm talking to the students.
Yeah.
You understand? What I mean? Mm-hmm. And there's a reason why we have representation, right? And we have a shared governance, and we have, you know, student organizations, and you have a radio station. Representing people, right? And that's because you need structure to represent people. But if you want to know what's going on, ask the people.
Yeah.
Right? You can ask the representatives, but you better ask the people, because 10 representatives can in no way know what 10,000 people mm-hmm. are experiencing. So, and people, again, with great intentions, do the best they can. And there's a reason and a purpose for that. And I think for me, I find out more about you as students, not by going to leaders of student organizations, which I do learn a lot there. I find out more about you as students when I just walk around campus. Like when I go to your theater presentation, I just found out something about a student, right? When I talk to my students who are in jazz band, I found out a little bit more about a student. When I walk into a classroom, I found out a little bit more about a student. I go in a lab, I find a little, I just go walk through the commons. I find out all kinds of things about the students. So I think it's important to note that representation and leadership is important. That's one place to find out and get those voices heard. But you really want to know what's happening, particularly for people whose voices are not always visible or who might not even talk to those people in leadership. Go just be where regular folk are, right? Mm-hmm. For me, they come to my office hours or either I go to them. Mm-hmm. But I just think you can walk around campus. You can, you know, don't go only to the established clubs, organizations. Just go talk to students who are just living their lives. You'll discover many things and bring some of them here to sit here and do what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
You will discover, I mean, it's beautiful what is happening out there, but it is broad and there are many different versions. So for me, just being with you wherever you are is how I get to hear and see people who would in no other way be, you know, their voices would not be heard.
Wow.
Yeah, that was... Thank you. Thank you for sharing your view on that. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, I'll say one more thing there that I think is really important for our community. I'll say it's important to me, okay? And then it's important, I think, to our community. I hope it will be. It is important to our community. Goes back to teaching organic chemistry. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
I love teaching organic chemistry. Okay, I know. Okay, what's your favorite subject, by the way?
Oh, goodness. My favorite subject is probably like computer networking.
Oh, see, that makes my head spin, right? So, but I say that because that's your favorite subject, right? Mine is organic chemistry. What's yours?
I'm really fond of music.
Oh,
all the
you see the beauty of what's happening here? Like none of us is saying the same thing, right?
Yeah.
I just love that, right? That's the beauty of diversity right here in this room.
Mm-hmm.
So I love teaching organic chemistry. And when I say it, people, you know, they roll their eyes and do all kinds of things, unless it's your thing, right? If I'd have said music, you would have lit up, right? Because you're like, I get that one, right? Mm-hmm. What I will tell you to your question, to follow up on this question, is whenever I teach, there's a group of students who are going to sit in the front of the room and raise their hands for every question. Now, I've been teaching for a long time, and I have seen this phenomenon over, and I love that. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But there are some brilliant students sitting, you know, I never teach less than 200 students. There's some brilliant students sitting middle of the class and even in the back who are never going to say a word or make a connection with me if I don't go make a connection with them. And I say that because as I teach, I stand there and I know who these folks are in the front, right? That's beautiful. I have them. I walk around that room and I just look at them and I think, who are you? Like, what greatness is in you that you're not speaking, right? You don't maybe even know what's possible for your life yet. And it's those people that I have to seek and go to and meet them where they are. So that's my headspace. When I walk around campus, there are people who will walk right up to me. But then there are the people who will kind of look at me like, I think she's the president, but I'm not sure if I can talk to her. That happens all day, every day, by the way. And I stop what I'm doing because I think, okay, that's the person that if I don't go hear their voices, and it might be a really important voice, always it is. If I don't go to them, they're not going to, one, know that I saw them. And two, they're not going to know they're important to me, right? So I just say that to say sometimes you have to go deeper than the people who will automatically be the obvious people to hear. You know, I can't wait to know more about you, both of you, right? I'm sitting here thinking, oh, what is it about this music thing? And tell me more about this computing thing, right? But you have to sometimes go get that, especially from marginalized groups, from underrepresented groups, from individuals who are not accustomed to being seen and valued.
So just a quick plug. Mm-hmm. You were saying if you're out on campus,
yes,
and somebody is not sure if they can come talk to you, would you say everyone should come talk to you if they see you?
I love it. And students do, but students, some students don't, right? And I have to stop and go to them. I take selfies all day. the whole thing. I always want to engage with you. Always. Yeah.
Oh, you heard it here first.
There you
probably
go.
Probably not first time, but yeah. Definitely hearing it
I hope
again.
Many students already know, but for those who haven't heard, this is why I'm here.
So, again, with the hard-hitting questions.
No, you're fine.
So, from the eyes of a minority woman currently leading a national university in your lifelong history as a student and now at the top, do you have any advice in regards to student self-advocacy and how high-ranking faculty and part-time alike could be more present and aware of the events previous and current that inevitably affect their daily life?
Yeah. So there are multiple ways on our campus. And, you know, your question tells me that there's more work for us to do, or else you wouldn't need to ask the question. So I'm going with that there's probably a lot more work for us to do in communicating clearly and making sure avenues and pathways are clear for people to not only share information, but to receive information. I go back to the previous question. The first thing is that I need people to know. I heard you say a word that I'm going to turn upside down. You said you've been a student and now that you're at the top. Okay. And I want to tell everybody who's listening, and you'll hear me say this 1,000 times over, that's not the way I think about it. So I think of leadership as service. And I'm coming to the other part of your question. I think of leadership as service. Now, I know I have responsibility, but it's service. So I just didn't start thinking about it this way when I came to this job. I thought about that in my previous two jobs. So I tell everybody, just draw a triangle where the point is at the top. Okay. Now turn it upside down. That point is now at the bottom and the broad base is at the top. That point is your leader. That's me on this institution. Everybody else that I serve is above that, is on that base, somewhere in that triangle, all the way up to the top. That's everybody else that I serve. When I was a chair of a department that was 50 faculty, 80 postdocs, 250 graduate students, everybody we served was up there. As a dean, it now became like 700 faculty. Now, it's this entire campus, right? So if you know that I think about leadership as service, in service to all those people, then it changes how you think you can communicate with me. I hope.
Definitely.
I hope that you understand I need you. How am I going to be of any use to you if I don't know what you need and I'm not hearing that from your own voices? I expect that. Okay. I'm going to lead. That's for sure. Right. That's my job. But it's in service to all of that. So I'm hopeful that people will take advantage of offers like student office hours. They've been busy since last August. It's awesome. 2 hours every Thursday afternoon. Come on in and tell me what you're thinking, right? I engage with shared governance on campus. I go to the university steering committee where all the leaders from shared governance are, including our student leaders from both graduate and undergraduate organizations. And it's, you know, I come, I put it on my calendar every time they meet. And unless I'm out of town, I'm there. And it's just an opportunity for people to hear what's happening, but also share what they're thinking, ask any questions. I'm open to going almost anywhere. You invite me somewhere and I'll come and we'll talk. But I want people to know this is your university. We leaders are here in service to you. And we can't do that if we don't hear your voices. And also know, this is one thing I'll ask from everybody. You've heard me say a few times now, I'm going to give everybody the benefit of the doubt that they're doing the best they can, right? You have to do that because we're all humans. And, you know, humans are complex, right?
Oh, yeah.
And on any given day, you know, one day may be better than the next, right? So I just have to assume that people, if they were at their best, you know, they would do it differently maybe, right? Or whatever they did, that was their best on that day. I would ask for that same thing, right? I'm learning this entire university. We're going through a major transition. And I would ask people, if you think we are doing something or something is happening that doesn't look like it's in service to you, and or you don't understand, you got to know that we were doing our best, and you got to then communicate and say, hey, that didn't resonate with us. I don't know what that means. Tell me what's happening. But I just want everybody to know, like, that's the leadership model that I have, and that's built on reciprocal, you know, real, true communication. Sorry for the long answer.
That's totally fine.
We appreciate those.
So going back a little bit to, you know, your position at, as you say, as at the bottom of this triangle, mm-hmm. as we invert it, mm-hmm. how do you think your transition into that role has gone so far?
I should ask you. When I say you, I mean the university. I will tell you what I feel. Let me start with gratitude. I have a lot of gratitude for my predecessor, President Hrabowski. It is a rare thing in any institution of higher education to have a leader that is effective for 30 years. Mind-blowing, right? That would not have been me, let me just tell you. Okay? So I'm so grateful for him for what he has helped to build and what this institution stands for and represents nationally. Mm-hmm. I'm also grateful that in the transition that he said, I'm not going to be on campus and I'm not going to be, you know, kind of shadowing everything that's happening and what you're doing, because he wanted to give me the opportunity to learn this myself, to build my relationships and to lead. By the way, just as I don't give much advice, but if you're ever going to be a leader, when you leave a position, leave it so that the new person has an opportunity to do what they need to do, right? Give them as much advice and wisdom as you can, as they want, and then walk away. And he did that. It was beautiful, right? He's there if I need him, and he's wonderful. But he also prepared the campus for the transition, and so he has not occupied the space while I'm trying to occupy the space, so I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. And it's a big deal to change leaders after 30 years. It's a lot of change management. Mm-hmm. And as much as the campus has known it's coming, there's no substitute for it actually happening. There's some things for which you cannot fully prepare. Just because imagine that the majority of people on this campus have never had another leader sit in this job. They've never known another leader. Isn't that something?
Yeah.
Like your whole academic life, if you were undergrad here, you could have been an undergrad, a graduate student, a faculty member, you could be all of that, a dean, a provost, and had one leader. That's a big deal. So for me, I am exceedingly patient with the transition because it's not something you can rush through. Mm. Even as people have been kind, there's a little bit of grief. Right? Just of the the thing that you knew is no longer there, even as people have expressed excitement. So I feel good that I am learning the campus. I love the bowl sessions. We had about 1,400 people who registered for bowl. Wow. That's amazing. I heard a lot of voices, 22 meetings, 11 different topics. That was extraordinary. So I feel like we're doing the best we can. It's not a small lift. And we will be making this transition for, I think, another few years. It just takes that much time to transition.
Mm.
Yeah. But I appreciate everybody's willingness and patience with me, even as I try to be compassionate for how hard this is.
Right. Just one last question.
Sure.
UMBC Bold has been your kind of like a big push
recently.
Mm-hmm. Do you think Bold has yielded the results that you wanted to see when you went into it?
More than I could have imagined. I had no idea. So first of all, people are busy, right? Students are busy. Oh, faculty are busy. Graduate students are really busy, right? Like people are busy. Staff are really, really busy. I did not know how much people, I knew they would want to engage, but I didn't know how much time they would actually have to give to it. So as I just said, hundreds of people, more than 1,000 people, in person, hybrid, online, the whole thing. So I was just really thrilled with the participation, but not just with the participation, the ideas and the responses. We asked three questions in every session, which, by the way, was phenomenal to me that people stuck to the topic. I've never seen academics stick to the topic. So I just thought, okay, these are going to be guidelines that people are going to talk about whatever they want to. No, this campus actually stuck to the questions, which was amazing. But it gave people a chance to essentially tell me three things. One is that, what are they proud about, excited about, want to celebrate around whatever the particular topic was. Essentially, that's the way that people get to tell me, Valerie, please don't break it. We're fine. Like, leave it alone, right? And then the second was around challenges that keep us from reaching our mission and vision and goals for the future around that topic, which was great. People shared. We have lots to celebrate, but we know we're not perfect. Who is, right? What institution is? And then the last was to hear their bold aspirations. That was fun to hear people talk about some of the things that I think are just so easable and short term, and we could just do them. And then some things I thought, we're going to have to figure out a pathway to that or the resources for that. And we had all levels of bold aspirations shared. So for me, it was really good. I feel like I got a crash course in UMBC in a semester, and I still have so much to learn, but it was really helpful. I hope the community also enjoyed hearing from each other. That was pretty special to watch people meet each other, actually, in these sessions. I wasn't the only new, and sometimes they've been here for years and still didn't know each other. So I just think it was necessary and useful, and it will actually frame our strategic plan work in the fall.
All right. Well, we will definitely be on the lookout for that big change that you said was going to be led by a student.
I can't wait to tell you what it is.
Certainly be.
When it happens, I'm going to tell you, that was a student who came in my office with an entire PowerPoint plan, okay? In much a UMBC style, right? It was beautiful. I can't wait to tell you. Well, I think it's going to benefit everybody.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Dr. Valerie Shears-Ashby, president of UMBC. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Many thanks are owed for making this episode happen. We want to thank the music department at UMBC for use of their recording space and equipment for this interview, including the following individuals in particular: Mr. Alan Wanaberger, director of recording at the music department at UMBC, Ms. Sarah Bogger, music technical coordinator for the music department at UMBC, and Danny Glasser, our consultant from Hearst Media, WBAL, and 93 Rock. This episode was written by Rayan El-Tantawi and was supervised and produced by Danny Glasser and Sarah Bogger. Farewell for now, but remember, don't let student voice die.